officials from the Gaddafi regime as well, who say, no, it's a bad thing for Muslims to fight Muslims during Ramadan, but we will go ahead, we will continue fighting.
Somalia's top militant group may use Ramadan to mount an attack on government forces. The African nation is facing its worst drought in 60 years. And how dry we are. The U.S. Drought Monitor today had some bad news. The percent of U.S. land experiencing exceptional drought in July reached the highest levels in U.S. history. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
This is a Federal News Radio special report. I'm Amy Morris. A shutdown has been averted.
On this vote, the yeas are 348, the nays are 70, and the motion is adopted. And without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
Congress and the White House have agreed to a continuing resolution that includes $2 billion in spending cuts. That will keep the government open until Thursday. They've also agreed on a framework including another $38 billion in cuts, which covers the rest of FY 2011. They do expect to pass that legislation before Thursday. Shortly after midnight, White House Budget Director Jacob Lew issued a memo instructing the government's departments and agencies to continue normal operations. I'm Amy Morris. For complete coverage on budget negotiations impacting your agency, go to federalnewsradio.com.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Struggling states from Maryland and Virginia to Texas and California would be hit with staggering unemployment costs if federal agencies are forced to furlough or fire employees this fall. This is Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey. For a while now, the crisis du jour consuming Washington was the issue of the debt limit or default. Each side claimed it had the answer, and listening to the other party would lead to a worldwide disaster. But when we get out of this one, there's another problem looming. Government costs must be cut, and that means federal agencies, from the IRS to the Defense Department, will have to reduce their payrolls. And that could come via a series of furloughs, like the ongoing one at the Federal Aviation Administration, or through layoffs. Either one would have a huge financial impact on the 50 states. So, what happens if hundreds of thousands of feds are told to take a number at the local unemployment office? Check out my column, Mike Causey's Federal Report, at federalnewsradio.com.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The General Services Administration has become the first federal agency to move its entire email system to the cloud. GSA says only 1% of its 17,000 workers experienced serious problems during the transition from its legacy email system. The agency says the move will cut its email costs in half, saving about $15 million over 5 years. Next in line is the Department of Agriculture, which expects to have more than 100,000 users in the cloud within 2 months.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Join Alan Greenspan, the former chair of the Federal Reserve System, as he discusses the intersection of economics and IT at the Innovation Nation Forum, August 23rd at the D.C. Convention Center. Also there, the Merit Awards will recognize the best idea to use IT to improve government with a $50,000 cash prize. Shake IT up. Register at meritalk.com. That's MERITALK.com.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt.
We spent more than 2 years modernizing and making it efficient, building morale, and then to have this happen through no fault of anyone here. This is a political fight, and if people want to have a political fight, they should go rent a ring and get in it and have it. But to take 4,000 innocent FAA employees and literally tens of thousands of construction workers and put them out of work, I find this unconscionable.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federal. Drive.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about a crisis-averted short-term with a view to the long-term impact. And joining us this morning is Mike Causey, Senior Correspondent with Fed News Radio. Good morning, Mike.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And Mike is the one that got Tammy and I on the air just a scant few years ago, right, Tammy?
Just a few.
Yeah.
They called it Marconi in those days instead of radio.
And Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, Weekly GovExec columnist, webinar presenter, and you're on Francis Rose's, what's the name of the show?
Yeah, In Depth with Francis Rose. I could say it should be In Deep with Francis Rose, but it is In Depth with Francis Rose.
Okay.
Yep. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. And I'm Bob Lines, and I'm with NITP as a tax finance type. Anyway, so we got the crisis averted. I understand, though, it still has to pass the vote. So
yeah, I think and Tammy is very skeptical, too. It's not over till it's over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're watching TV even we speak. And I don't think very many people, and I am not one of them, understand what's going on, what's tentatively been agreed to, mm-hmm. what could happen next, how long this is going to last. I mean, to me, this is just a mystery.
Yeah, I got up early for me. Well, it was early. It was 5. And I figured, okay, I'm going to learn something for the show. I couldn't find anything specific other than they weren't going to fool with Social Security and they weren't going to raise tax rates, at least as proposed.
Well, maybe I think not there's money right now to pay contractors, pay federal employees. I think everyone's going to get a paycheck who was worried about not getting one. But other than that, I think there's still details that are yet unknown. And apparently some commission is going to be formed to make further proposals to reduce the budget or the deficit. So that's where we could still see cuts to federal benefits, possibly, if any of those proposals in that commission report that is yet to be determined ever get passed. But we've had commission reports as of December of last year and another one this spring, and none of those changes have happened yet.
Well, and the basis of all of the things that we've been worrying about now, you know, the high three to high five, the higher health premiums, there was this laundry list of things that were supposedly on the table. Those nearly all came out of the debt reduction commission appointed by President Obama, and that was supposed to be the be-all, end-all, and nothing happened. And then they had the Gang of Six, and then the Gang of Five, and then back to the Gang of Six again, and they had recommendations, many borrowed from the debt reduction commission. Then you had this Biden group, the so-called Biden or the Blair House group, and this was headed by the vice president, appointed by the president, and it was a congressional bipartisan group. So you had three different commissions and groups working on this, and the end result so far is nothing. Nothing has happened. And now they're going to, assuming they pass some sort of stopgap thing, then what are they going to do? They're going to appoint a commission.
And I think one of the other things is reducing the federal budget for the agencies. So I think we may see some continued, possibly early retirements being offered, maybe along with a buyout to get people to go to reduce the budget for next year. So that's something I think that may have come out of this.
Could we take those two things and slice them a little bit? First, the high five versus high three, and then the early out. I've seen, and you sent me this from, how do you pronounce his name, John Grobe?
Mm-hmm.
And he had written an article about the difference between the high five and high three, and there was another one in FedSmith. And I'm an accountant type, and I figured, boy, it'd be a huge difference, and there didn't appear to be that great a difference.
Well,
and somebody listening is going to say, one, it depends, and two, it's easy for me to say. but it wasn't insurmountable in if it changed. And maybe it's a sign of the times because we've had no COLAs, and high five and high three, maybe there is no difference if there's no COLAs. Well, unless there's a step increase or a grade increase.
I've kind of avoided the subject because it hasn't happened yet, and I don't want to further monger the fear that people have that we're going to have a high five, because I still am under the opinion it's not going to happen. But even if it did, if it took effect this year, if you're going to have a high three in 2011, you're going to go back to salary rates in 2008. If you're going to have a high five, then you're going to go back to 2006. So employees have seen pay changes between 2006, 2008, and today. Some employees have had a promotion during that time. Some have had step increases. We have had pay raises since 2006. So if you were to average your salary from 5 years ago versus 3 years ago, there would be a difference. And for some employees, it would be a significant difference. So if you're going to get 56% of $65,000 versus 56% of $60,000, that's going to be a difference in your retirement. So it depends on how many times your pay has changed over the last 3 to 5 years. Depends on how much service you have. Depends on whether or not you're leaving this year. And if you're not going to leave for another 5 years, or if your plans are flexible, you can offset the effect of a high five by working longer.
I think you're exactly right, not to join the mongers, because we were talking before the show on this. There are half a dozen things that were up for consideration, still exist, and probably will be considered by this new commission or maybe even Congress before that as part of the budget process. But all of the other options are much, much worse than going from a high three to a high five, and especially, as you point out, in a time of no pay raises or pay freezes. But it's funny. This is the one, I don't know if it's your experience, this is the one that most people have focused on. And you know, like I was telling you before the show, to me, you've got a crocodile out there, a leopard out there, a gorilla, an elephant that's going to crush you, and people are focusing on the rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
And the high five is the rabbit, the least dangerous one.
And the one that you can do something about.
You could. And the other thing is that very people around can remember it, but at one point, the government did have a high five system, and they switched. Congress put them on a high three. For some reason.
That was 1970 civil service reform.
Okay.
Which was improvements to the civil service system.
Well, and the other thing, too, is they're looking at this, and of course, times have changed. You know, you have the best year federal, postal, and retirees have ever had on the Hill in 2009, followed by 2 years of pay freezes. So things can change very quickly here. But there's an awful lot out there, and I think Tammy's right. It's one thing to understand the high three to high five, and it will impact different people different ways. But I've seen some studies that people have done themselves, and some of them have said the way they can beat that is to work another 3 or 6 months. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it's a relatively short period of time.
Right.
And if it's going to make a significant difference in your lifetime annuity,
stay a little longer. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not the worst thing that could happen, that you have to work a few months longer.
Particularly in an economy like this. I mean,
yeah, be thankful.
Federal workers, it used to be the case that the average Fed retired at 61. This is, and the average American retired at 62 or older. And I don't know if that's changed, but people will retire even if they don't think about getting another job. But people will retire if the job market is good. It's kind of just in case. But right now, if you're a federal worker thinking about retiring or leaving or taking a buyout, and you look at the job market away from Washington, you know, this is the land of milk and honey here. But when you get out of the city to the rest of the real world, it's tough out there.
It sure is. Tammy, you were on Francis's show this past Friday, and you were discussing early retirement. And we're not saying that they're going to offer early retirement, but if there's some combination of things that somebody says, if I leave early, what does early retirement mean to a FERS person versus a CSRS?
Well, it's relevant right now to a number of federal employees, because there are some early retirements currently being offered, particularly Postal Service. And what other agencies have
Postal
you heard
Service
about?
Is doing it. Smithsonian is having buyouts.
I think NASA is going to be offering some.
They will have to. Air Force was looking at it. One branch of the Navy was looking at it. Agriculture Department, a portion of them was offering buyouts and or early outs. So they're coming.
And if government appropriations next year are going to get cut, then I think you're going to see more agencies look to that as a way to accommodate the less budget. So I think it is a real thing that people should have in the back of their mind, that possibly they either are currently being offered or may get offered an early out in the future. And I said this back in the 90s when all the downsizing was happening as a result of the outsourcing movement that was going on back then. I said if we had more FERS employees who were eligible for early retirement, we would see more of them take it, because the whole design of the new retirement system was to be more flexible and more portable, given that the employees contribute to TSP, which would be very similar to contributing to a private sector 401k, and they're covered by Social Security, which is different from the old retirement system. So I don't think the FERS employees feel that golden handcuffs or that starting over feeling if they got an early out and were able to go into private industry. And for a FERS employee as well as a CSRS employee, to qualify for early retirement, you've got to be either 50 years old and have 20 years of government service, or if you're younger than 50 but you have 25 years of service, you would also be eligible for early retirement. And under the FERS system, the benefit calculation for the retirement portion of FERS would be computed as if you were eligible, which you would be, eligible to retire based on your high three so far and your length of service computed at 1% per year. So in other words, if you had 25 years of service, your benefit under FERS would be 25% of your high three. And going along with that, if you qualify to keep your health benefits and life insurance, meaning that you had at least 5 years of coverage during your last 5 years of employment, you would also maintain lifetime coverage under FEHB and FEGLI. So you would have a basic benefit. You'd have hopefully enough money to pay for the other benefits to go with it, the opportunity to start a new career, and as Mike said, if there is one out there, and you'd have your TSP that follows you at 100% vested, and you'd have your Social Security coverage, which is the same Social Security you'll pay into if you go to work for IBM or Hewlett-Packard or whatever company out there that is willing to hire you. So I think for a FERS employee, if they're thinking that might be in the works, I'd start looking around to see what else is out there that they might be able to do, because it's chances are you wouldn't be able to afford to retire with 25 years of service, but it's an opportunity to go do something different if there's something else out there.
And this is one of those things, too. It's really going to depend on your skill set. Hate that word, but what you do. Vis-a-vis the private sector, if you're a federal worker now and you have a security clearance, you have your own health insurance, you have your own thrift savings plan. I mean, you bring to an employer an awful lot of stuff. You might not even want to get on to their health plan. So you're bringing a security clearance, which costs thousands and thousands of dollars to get, and that's a gift to them. So if the contractor market doesn't dry up, and that's the big if, there are an awful lot of people in the federal government now with the skills and the abilities in the Homeland Security field, in the law enforcement field, who can leave government, get an even better job or a comparable job, and maintain their pension and their benefits. So it's for some people, it would be a golden opportunity.
Okay.
Opportunity might be like entrepreneurs or small businesses, where health insurance is something that would be very expensive, but having your own health benefits, like you said, is kind of a way to transition into something like that. So I think there are opportunities out there if the early outs do get offered, or if someone is in a position where they might have to make that decision.
You don't do like a friend of a friend. This woman's husband got a buyout, not from the government, but from I guess it was a state government, got a buyout, substantial amount of money. This is 15 years ago, $75,000, something like that. And he'd always wanted, he never liked working for the man. He wanted to be his own boss. He noticed in a store that a vanilla bean in a jar cost a dollar. Now, why anybody would want a vanilla bean in a jar, but that's what they cost. And he did his homework and found out that you can get up in Mexico then for a nickel a piece. So he rented a truck. The rest is history. Anyhow, if you want vanilla beans, I know
he's got a whole garage full of them.
You can get them cheap.
I had an email from somebody this weekend who said he was 48 years old. He's going to take the buyout with the early retirement his agency is offering him. And what his question was, he says, between his FERS retirement and his, he won't even get Social Security and not even the supplement until he reaches the MRA. So he said he's going to need to start using his TSP account because he wants to retire at 48. And I think that's a dangerous proposition, because at age 48, you could have another 48 years left to live. And if you need that TSP money to last you that long, I think you're walking on shaky ground. So I think for someone to have the idea that they can retire and stop working at 48 might be a little bit of a pipe dream.
Further, if they're 48, the amount that they can get from the TSP without a penalty is very small.
Right. It's based on their age.
Based on their age. We actually had a email, and it was an individual that was required to retire at 55 or 56. I think we just got it this weekend, Tammy. And said, well, you know, the folks at work say that if I transfer that money to an IRA, I wouldn't have to pay the penalty because I would, when I take the money out of the IRA, because I would be accepted because I was required to leave. Once that goes into the IRA, the 59.5 flag goes up for a penalty. But if it stayed in the TSP, they could take it out of the TSP at varying amounts. There's an option to take it out monthly, but you can change it every year without a penalty. Now, there will always be income tax. Yeah. But to skirt the penalty, and then when they hit 59.5, they can do what they want. But moving it over, once they cross the plane and they take it out of the TSP and it goes into a traditional IRA, the penalty age is 59.5. And there are exceptions.
Yeah.
But it's not because you had to retire early.
I was going to go back on that a little bit, because I think with people looking at early retirement, a lot of them may be being offered to retire before age 55. Maybe we should review that a little bit. Because if you read the TSP, there's a booklet on tax information on withdrawing from your TSP. It's about a 4-page publication. You can find it on tsp.gov. But what it says if you withdraw money from a employer-sponsored retirement plan like the thrift prior to 59.5, there's a 10% early withdrawal tax penalty on top of the taxes due on the amount that you withdraw. But then right underneath where it says that, it says, but there are exceptions. And there's a list of probably 10 exceptions to that 10% penalty. And the first one is the one you just mentioned, Bob. It's the one that says, if you separate in the year that you turn 55 or later, if you leave the government in the year you turn 55 or later, you're exempt from that penalty. So for most people who retire at the normal age of 55 or 56, 58, they don't have to worry about that. As long as they take the withdrawals directly from the thrift, there's no 10% penalty. But on the employees who are facing early retirement at 48 or at 50 or 54, who aren't going to be 55 in the year that they separate, then the other exceptions would include a life expectancy payout or the purchase of a life annuity, which both of those are going to be based on your age, meaning that if you have a long life expectancy, your payout's going to be very small. And there's calculators on TSP.gov where you can run both of those scenarios for the life expectancy payout or the life annuity and give yourself an idea of realistically how much income you could really expect if you took that option.
And actually, then, with regards to that, if the life payout was not enough to keep the person happy, or better
paying
stated,
their bills.
Pay their food bills, then there's two other ways to do it, but they're mind-boggling. They're called the 72T rules, and it's actually very simple. There's a website, 72, not spelled out, the number 72, and T. And just click on that. It's got a little calculator, and you can do it three different ways.
But that's not directly from the thrift. That would be moving your TSP to an IRA and then...
Well, actually, you could do it with the thrift if you chose the where you can change it every year.
Oh, okay.
So you could do a monthly payment, but
recalculate it.
And because under, I call it the A option, which is life expectancy, and the B option is at your discretion. So your discretion would be a calculation based on this, which you can annually change your mind. And in this case, you'd have to, because based on these numerical calculations that... would make one go crazy if they had to do it manually, but this program on that website is just very simple.
You know, knowing all this stuff or not knowing all this stuff, I wouldn't retire. I wouldn't go to force me out.
Well, you just have to listen to this show and yours, right? And read your columns.
Wow.
And Tammy's columns.
Deep in the woods for me.
A lot to think about. And I think employees who are facing this at a younger age, in many cases, haven't given it a lot of thought. So I think there's even more fear that I don't even know what I have, let alone what I would have if I left or what options are out there. So I think getting some education is probably the first step, just understanding what your options are and being able to make logical choices.
And talking about education, if anybody should call us, they can pick our brains for the next 24 28 minutes. We're on till 10:58:50. It's 10:25:30 right now. And we'll be happy to take your call. Today is August 1st, 2011. Don't call us after that 10:58:30 because we won't be here. But you can email us, and we'll talk about the email later. But our phone number is 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. And you have the smorgasbord of knowledge that I'm staring at.
That's right.
Yeah, we've all been at this... If you put us all together, we could be 100 years of experience.
Yeah,
maybe.
easily. Yeah. Well, you know, when you, I know you guys do this for a living. You conduct the seminars and whatnot, but this is one area, it seems to me, where the federal government excels. I have never heard of a company, large or small, that will bring in a team like yours and pay for it, even make it available to people if they're 5 years out from retirement or whatever. And I know the companies that I've worked with, in fact, they shy away from it because they feel a fiduciary responsibility to people. And I know it's the Washington Post, to find a point. They wouldn't give us any advice on our thrift savings plan, our 401k, not because they were mean, but because they didn't want somebody to come back later on and say, you told me to go into this or told me this would be better. And so most small companies shy away from giving your employees any kind of retirement counseling. And if I was a federal government employee, I would shop around at no matter what my age and see if there was a seminar going or an expert there and say, please sign me up, or heaven forfend, I'll even pay a little something to come in and do this, because I realized I knew absolutely nothing about retiring. Even when I got close, even doing it all these years, I was thinking about other people and not me.
And the private side, I would say, is easier to explain than the federal side. Because, I mean, I listened to Tammy and Ridgeca.
Yeah.
Well, even if there is a pension, there aren't all these options and pre this
not
year
this
and
history,
that year.
Yeah.
And the history that you all talk about, I just go... I thought taxes were hard, and you all make taxes sound easy.
Well, it's funny because some of the agencies we go into, and you know this, Bob, because some places we'll go and there's a wait list to get into the classes that are offered on retirement planning, where we'll have a full class every time we show up there, and sometimes we're there once a month. But then there's other agencies we'll go into, like one I was at last week, where they were holding a mid-career seminar for all the FERS employees. They even invited employees from other agencies to come. And we had 13 people show up, and there was room for 35 people. Why don't people come? I don't understand it. Maybe it's because the fear of it, that it is complicated. Maybe they just don't want to think about it. Or maybe it's because if it's mid-career, we're thinking, well, we got 20 years left to work. You know what? We don't need this just yet. But I think, you know, what we found from our retirement seminars is when people come the year before they leave, their biggest comment is, wish we would have had this 20 years ago. So we're in a catch-22.
I was going to say, Tammy and the benefits folks are always the first day of a 2 or 3 day seminar, always, because that's what the people come for. And
well,
then,
everything else bounces off of your benefit.
Exactly. So it they almost have to be, and then it can be followed up with other things. But you know, sometimes I'll get the critiques because I'm the last speaker, which why they put me taxes last, I don't know. But anyway.
And to keep them coming back.
Where was this 10 years ago? Now, Tammy, your comment about 13 people there, they're the ones saying, oh, I'll do it later. Mm-hmm. And they might be the ones writing the critique. Boy, I wished I had gone to that thing.
You know, I don't know. I don't know that the government or any other employer now wants to keep people for a long time. I don't know what their motivation is. But if they do, it would be a blessing to have an early course like this for young people and say, look, you've got a 401k plan. You may not even know what that is, but here's what it is. And most employers, I think, don't give any kind of a match. But if they do, that's money on the table to take. And I'm not sure how I would have reacted at age 25 if 401ks had existed and various other things. And, you know, you're immortal. You'll never get old. You'll never retire. But that said, I think some people would get it. And Bob and I have a mutual friend who shall remain nameless. But this is a guy who's a planner for life. He literally had it written out, and he started investing right out of college in other things before, in addition to his company pension plan or his government pension plan. Extremely well off now, but he had a plan from day one, and I think more people would do that if they knew what they could plan for.
I had one guy in a seminar one time. He was like a GS-5 or GS-7. He wasn't a real high grade level employee, but he had like 35 years of service. And he was coming up to me at the end of the class. He was CSRS. And he says, you know, my civil service retirement because of my salary is not going to be a huge amount of money. He says, but I'm not worried about that because every year of my career, every pay period, I've set aside money in an account and I've invested that money. And he said, that investment is going to be more than my civil service retirement is going to provide.
Wow.
So he was someone at relatively low grade level, but learned to live within the means of the salary he did have and set aside diligently every 2 weeks a little bit of that paycheck. And boy, a little bit adds up to a lot over 35 years.
That's good. And that's that's probably old school. The people coming out of school now are the newbies. They of the most, I'm going to say, unattended seminars, we can't seem to crack the beginning career market, not because they're not interested, they're not enough of them interested. Mm-hmm. But sometimes because they don't have the seminars, I'll see 28, 32-year-olds at a pre-retirement seminar. And I usually go up to them at the break, you know, and I say, with all due respects, why are you here? Mm-hmm. And they go, because we don't want to be in a position 20 or 30 years from now saying,
Wish
I would have done it early.
Yep.
So, anyway.
Or else their supervisor made them come because some of them will come and then they'll go back and tell their younger employees that you need to hear this because this is when it's going to make a difference.
Now, one of the things that if we're talking about people that are going to stay on, we're focusing a little bit here with early outs and high fives and people running out the door either because they have to or because they're given an incentive to do. But if we do stay on, I mean, we'd be very happy that we have the employment, but you all have much more knowledge with this than I. I understand the finances and I understand the tax, but I don't always understand why they would want to say, I remember Mike, one show, you said, there's no employer in the world where you can go here, there, or somewhere else. You know, you can leave NASA and go to an intelligence, yeah. You can leave the intelligence and go to a social agency So you watch out for that. Training, I'm probably answering my own question here, but training, I mean, the training available to the federal employee is beyond me. I've always worked corporate side, and I see they can learn Microsoft, they can learn Excel spreadsheets back then, and they don't do that in my company.
Right, just even in the law enforcement field, they send, you know, new agents, new police officers, the state-of-the-art training in Glencoe, Georgia, or out in New Mexico.
Yeah.
They have the training facilities. And once you have that training, you're a federal-trained law enforcement officer. You're like gold in any law enforcement agency, whether it's state, private, local, whatever. So you're right. The training is beyond compare.
And in the private sector, too, quite often, if there is training, it's on your dime. It's on your time.
That's right.
And the incentive, and I was at one place, and they were converting to some kind of computer or something, and you did it on your own time, you scheduled it, and the incentive was if you didn't get it, you were fired. And so that's quite different from the federal government.
Even something as lowly, my son for the summer job he's going to college in August, but he's a lifeguard, and to get his pool operator's license and his Red Cross certificate, he had to pay for the training. Mm-hmm. It's like he's going to make $9 an hour, and he had to pay for his own lifeguard training. It's like, geez, he'll work the first month paying off his uniforms and his training. Which we don't do that in the government. It's paid for.
Yeah.
And when I do a mid-career seminar, I always tell the employees, you know, I give a list of what ifs. You know, I say, what if you stay in government long enough to retire? You know, and we go over what that is. What if you became disabled? We have disability benefits. What if you left early? What would you do? What benefits would you take with you into private industry? And what would private industry have to offer you? And I think that's something a lot of people don't realize, especially if you've been in federal service since you got out of school. You might think that private industry has the same level of benefits, the same leave, the same sick program, everything. It does not. You know, it is much less liberal than the federal service. So that is something people need to consider before they think the grass is greener on the other side sometimes.
Actually, I have friends and clients, and I tell them what we do, and they go, you do? And they pay for it. And oddly enough, they listen to this show, I know, and they listen to other shows, because some of the things we talk about aren't just feds. You know, TSP is a 401k plan. They're just called different things. They have different IRS code section numbers, but they basically have the same rules, although the TSP is better than the 401k probably. But nonetheless, we don't need to go there. But they pick up things. Mm-hmm. A couple of attorneys out there, they were driving in to work on Monday. They come in late, and they said, we always listen to your show. It's good stuff. And yeah. Actually got an email from somebody at a I won't say what agency, and they were listening to the show, and they said, that was good. And this was something that this agency does that we were talking about.
Well, you know, one of the points that you've made it before, but I don't think you can emphasize it enough. If your employer offers you a match in your 401k plan, it is found money. It's gold.
100% return.
100% return. If the federal government, for instance, the total maximum match for the FERS people is 5%. That means the government will match 5%. 5% tax-deferred pay raise. You can't beat it. And you see Susie Orem, these other people on television, and although their styles differ, they always say, if your employer has a match, go for it.
Right.
Now, CSRS people should be in the TSP for different reasons. They don't have that match incentive, and they have a better retirement plan. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this thrift savings plan, as you said, is gold. It's got the lowest administrative fees in the business. It is, I think, half again what Vanguard's are, and Vanguard's is the lowest in the business. Well, the TSP is half of that. And so those administrative fees, and again, I wouldn't have paid any attention to it until you brought it out on one of your shows, but those administrative fees add up over time. And if you get into one of these carefully managed funds that sometimes do very well, but it may be 2 or 3% that you have to, it has to earn 2 or 3% before you break even. You know, that's the fee. So this thrift savings plan and understanding it early, and this is, I think it would be an advantage to have some kind of seminar for new people, you know, maybe after the 2-year mark when they've passed their probation. These are people you want to keep.
We haven't, but it's not.
But you got to get somebody to come. That's
yeah. But you also got to get an agency to pay for it, because their priority is to pay for the pre-retirement training.
Sure.
Because employees are retiring, so they have to leave enough training budget to cover everybody, which sometimes is spread pretty thin. I was remembering what Karen Schaefer, we had Karen was on the show last Monday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a follow-up email. Someone wrote in about their TSP, and they said that they were retiring, I guess, this year, maybe this month, and they have all this money in the TSP, and what should I do with it? Should I move it all to the G fund is what the lady wanted to know. And I loved Karen's response, because she said, if you're going to spend that money, all of it, within the next 5 years, definitely put it in the G fund. And then she said, if you're never going to spend it, if you really don't need it, then put it in the G fund, because you don't want to expose it to any risk. But if you're going to be living on that money for the next 30, 20, 30, 40 years, then you better diversify it. So I think this education of understanding how to split your money between the different TSP options is something we, even at retirement, some of us still need help understanding why diversification is going to be the key to having financial security in the future. That's just one aspect of TSP investing that a lot of employees don't understand.
And there's these target date funds, too, that takes some of the guesswork out of it for you. They've used good models, and whether you have a conservative portfolio or more daring, but even the most conservative portfolio
still has some money in the stocks and
bonds in the foreign markets.
And they're very cautiously picked, as you say. They're not just a foreign market. It's a model. And it's a model that's tried and true, and as well as the stock fund, been around for a long time. And like you said, the fees. Who is it? Is it John Bogle?
Yes.
I think he was on a show.
Yeah, we had Francis Rose, and I had John Bogle, who's the founder of Vanguard and the godfather of the index fund. And, I mean, this guy is the guru.
There.
He wrote the book, you know. And he said he's never met anybody who could time the market, and he can't time the market. You know, so don't, you're trying to pick highs and lows.
Yeah, like, should I get out now?
Right,
well,
exactly.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, yeah. But then when do you get back in?
Yeah, yeah. And then again, that's what the pros say is it's easy to get out. You know, and I think I was hearing from federal workers who said they were going to get out anticipating today this budget problem and the debt limit situation, and they were going to get out until it's safe to come back. When is it safe to come back?
That's the key is knowing both
states.
You
have to jump on a fast-moving train twice, jump off it and then jump back on it.
At the right time.
Yeah, they've had, I've seen stats, I think Karen actually sent them to me, and it showed, going way back, I mean, this wasn't yesterday, I mean, it was going back maybe 70 years, and they took, okay, if you got out at the top, and then you got back in at the bottom, which is highly unlikely, this is what you would do. But then they broke it up into like 10-year interims, and nobody was beating it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just, you know, you weather the proverbial storm and look ahead and pull over when you're getting close to when you really need it and you don't want to outlive it.
Live by the sleep at night rule. Mm-hmm. If you can sleep at night with your investments, do that. If you can't, even though it's probably the wrong thing to do, be the most conservative thing you have.
And stay in the federal government. So if there is anything negative coming out of this, it's probably going to be just as negative on the other side. But the federal government, I've been on both sides, and it's just it's hard to beat. Now, you know, you maybe can't make the big dollars that you see in the headlines, but very few make those big dollars that are in the headlines.
Yeah, this parade and once a year does one of these "what we make" issues, and it's shocking,
isn't it?
And how low pay is at so many occupations and to some extent even some professions. You know.
Yeah, my friend is in Pittsburgh, works for a big hospital in Pittsburgh, and she's in the administration end of it. She's a, you know, administrative assistant. And she just got a promotion after being there like 20 years, and she's up to $40,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And she's excited because she's up to $40,000 finally. She finally broke that barrier where when someone comes to Washington to take an entry-level job, if they're not making over $40,000, they can't rent an apartment. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it has to do with cost of living and, you know, comparable wages where you live. But a federal employee in Pittsburgh could still make $75,000, you know, depending on which job they're in. So I think the government does have a lot to offer, and I think we underestimate it sometimes when we don't see that big picture. Because with FERS, when FERS was implemented back in the 80s, the model was private industry retirement plan, which was a three-legged stool with a pension, Social Security, and a 401k or employer-sponsored savings plan. And through the years, FERS has maintained that three-legged stool. We have a pension, we have a 401k, we have a Social Security coverage. But the private sector model has changed in 20 years. One of those legs has disappeared from most corporate pension plans, which is the pension. So for most private sector employees, their retirement system is basically called save. You know, whatever you can put in your 401k plus your Social Security benefit is what you're going to have to live on.
And if they get a pension, it doesn't have a COLA.
It may not have a COLA for sure.
I called my former employer one time and because I wanted to do a comparison of our pension plan with the federal government's retirement system. And I asked the head of RHR, I said, when's the last time employees of our company got a COLA? And she said, what's a COLA?
I answered that
question. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of times they may provide one, but it's up to the board of directors to decide if it's needed or necessary, how much it's going to be. Where the one in the federal plan is implemented by Congress, it's in the law that there is a COLA. As long as there's an increase in prices, then there's a cost of living adjustment.
And members of Congress get it, and retired members of Congress and staffers, and that's a nice group to be in. Mm-hmm. I've got to update this story because I tell it so often, but a good friend retired from the company. He'd been there 30 years, and his pension from the company was makes $260 a month. That was his pension. And I ran into him 20 years later, and I said, what's your pension now? And he said, $260 a month. And
still
then
same.
5 years after that, $260 a month.
So. My dad was that way. I remember his was $975 a month in 1980, the year he retired.
Mm-hmm.
He passed away 18 years later. It was still $975 a month. It never changed a penny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, client just got a notice from the IRS and said you didn't report this pension. Well, they had double keyed the same amount in twice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote back and I said, this has been the same pension for the last 15 years. And gee, if they got two payments, where can we go to get the money?
Yeah.
But they don't owe the tax on it.
Did they appreciate your humor?
You never hear, but sometimes they come back and they never say a thousand pardons, but they're not all bad. So, yeah, you're right. And I don't ever put venom in any of the, that's a kiss of death. Even though you might not be happy, it's,
I think people might be interested that, you know, since our federal retirement benefits are part of the budget and the budget has been in the headlines and we're worried about taking cuts, there was a report that came out from the Congressional Research Service. They released a 2007 report. I just wanted to read like one piece of that because I think this will maybe put some people's minds at ease a little bit. It says, according to the projections of the fund's actuary, that's the Civil Service Retirement Disability Fund that pays out FERS and CSRS benefits, there is no point over the next 75 years at which the fund will be exhausted. Actuarial projections of the credits that will be entered into the fund and the benefits that will be paid from it indicate that the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund will be able to meet its financial obligations in perpetuity. That means beyond 75 years.
They only have that means?
That means it doesn't even, you know, end at 75 years. It says the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund continue to grow throughout the term of the projection and ultimately will reach a level of about 4.8 times payroll or about 23 times the level of annual benefit outlays.
Tammy, can you tell me how does money get into it?
The employees and the employers contribute to it every 2 weeks out of payroll.
Okay, so
the employees
that money
put in 0.8%. The employer for FERS employees puts in close to 12% of payroll for the average FERS employee, and that's the funding that's going in there to
both
pay future
employer,
benefits.
Employee. Because mm-hmm. when I do the seminars and I talk about that, they go, what's that? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, that's the number in the upper right of your leaving earnings statement. If that is not always in the upper right.
Well,
and they don't know that it was taken out. But the nice mm-hmm. point that that's where it gets funded. It gets mm-hmm. funded by the individual themselves, and then the agency puts money
and
into it.
The excess in there earns interest. So it's also the interest of the Civil Service Trust Fund that helps continue it to pay benefits in the future. So it's apparently well-funded, which makes it kind of mind-boggling as to why we'd want to reduce the benefits of something that is currently well-funded.
Well, I think, too, that a lot of people they think their contribution is all of it or at least half of it.
Yeah, no.
And it's like when you have a prescription drug filled, if you're lucky enough to have insurance, it'll show your payment is maybe $20. And usually it doesn't show what the real cost is. I think it should to give, you know, put people on the alert. But the same is true with the Civil Service Retirement Benefit and the Social Security. And people say, I paid in 30 years and it's my money. It's your money for about 18 months. You get it all mm-hmm. back within. And, you know, there used to be that 3-year rule that we dealt mm-hmm. with. But virtually all of us, once you've lived past a certain time, 18 months or 3 years, it's you're on somebody else's nickel.
It's a pretty nice rate of return, huh?
Absolutely.
And plus, I mean, they worked hard for it, but other people work hard for it, and they don't get that.
Right.
And then the other comment I get in class, I'm sure you do, Tammy, is, where is that money? Who's got it?
Well, it's not even money. It's securities.
Yeah,
it's bonds.
Yeah. And it is Treasury bonds,
Treasury bonds. Specially issued Treasury bonds that function solely as a record of unexpended budget authority. So these bonds cannot be sold by the trust fund to the general public in exchange for cash. They can only be returned to the Treasury, which recognizes each bond as representing an equivalent dollar cash budget authority to be used
and that's the G fund, isn't it?
Well, the
that's
G fund is a mirror image of it.
Mm-hmm. Similar to the G fund.
And then I had a long discourse last week with an individual about savings bonds. There is no secondary market for savings bonds, so it's not like a stock, but you know, will the value go down? And well, if it's redeemed, it won't, but if there was a budget crisis and they didn't do whatever they're hopefully going to do, I don't know that savings bonds would be one of the things that they're not going to pay. I mean, if they're not going to pay the troops, I doubt they'd pay the savings bond. Now, eventually they will, but for a short period of time, they might not. So if somebody was anxious about cashing them in, they might want to cash them in sooner. Not all of them. I don't think I'd cash them all in.
Well, Mike, he was mentioning the G fund, and there's been a lot of people nervous about the G fund and how safe is it really whenever we're facing a debt crisis like we've been in for the past month or so. And over the weekend, Tom Trabucco from the TSP said, I can use his quote, but it's a good explanation of this. Do you want me to read it?
Please do, because
okay, people
I think
it's very interesting,
it, yeah.
And it's very straightforward and plain English explanation. So here's what he said. He said, as a technical matter, each day the Treasury determines the value of the securities that may be issued to the G Fund that day without breaching the debt limit. We, the TSP, and the Treasury carefully track that number, which changes daily. Amounts for which securities are issued accrue earnings each day as normal under the Federal Employees Retirement System. Amounts for which securities are not issued accrue earnings each day under the statutory guarantee in the TSP Investment Act of 87, which the board requested and President Reagan signed into law 17 days later, which is why we were able to say that G Fund investors are fully protected when securities are issued and fully protected when securities aren't issued. If you look at the 87 law, you will see that the make whole refers to reconstructing the securities in the G Fund to replicate what they would have been had there been no interruption in their issuance. It is not about reconstructing the money, which continued to come in and remained on account in the Treasury. That's why we were able to show increasing G Fund balances each day in a participant's account. Something a lot of people have difficulty getting their minds around is the fact that there is never any money in the G Fund. If you look at the Federal Employees Retirement System accounting, you will see that the fund was created for the purpose of holding the securities that are issued in exchange for G Fund contributions. I think that this exchange of money for securities makes the transaction and investment. So I think that the person we're talking about that wrote in about this, it was correct saying that there is no money in the G Fund, which he's right. It's securities that are in the G Fund. Nevertheless, there is never supposed to be any money in the G Fund. For some reason, that is counterintuitive for many people. Bottom line, the G Fund is fully protected and still is to this day.
Right, but they do have money to cash in. Somebody wants to move money out of the G Fund, they can still...
It converts the securities back to cash.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. If you're driving around the Beltway now and you just heard that there's no money in the G Fund, and that's all you've heard.
You crashed your car.
You just crashed at Tyson's Corner.
Well, it'd be like you were talking about savings bonds. You know, I have a savings bond at home. I have no cash. It's just a bond. But I can take it to the bank where they can convert it back to cash for me. So I guess it's the same thing on a much bigger scale.
Well, for that matter, look in your pocket. And I've got a green slip of paper, you know, about this size, and one has a 1 on it and one has a 10 on it. And
you do? Let's go to lunch.
I know. Yeah, I knew it. I knew I made a mistake.
Got any with 20s on it?
No.
Now, Tammy, you were, was it last Friday in the GovExec column, and you talked about, you know, your money in your checking account. There's not.
Well, that's
not
what prompted this response from Tom, because I was trying to use the same comparison like Mike, saying that none of us really deal in cash anymore. We have credit cards. We have a check from our employer that gets direct deposited in the bank, unless you work for NITP, who still sends checks out. But, but you know, normally we don't deal in cash payments. We're dealing in a promise to pay money. And even when we go to the store to buy things, we don't generally take a pocket of cash. I usually keep less than $20 in my wallet.
Yeah.
Too easy to lose it.
I do too, but for different reasons.
That's all I got.
Yeah.
All right. So where do we head from here? They have to get this thing passed by midnight tomorrow night, meaning August 2nd.
Yeah, and you know, watching the monitor here, they said the Senate has either done it or will do it. The House is uncertain. So even the experts who claim to know it all don't know what the House is going to do, and I think that's the wild card in this. The newer members, the Tea Party people, and the true believers.
I think the frustration is for federal employees. We don't know any more today than we knew yesterday or the day before, as far as any impact of this is going to have on federal benefits. Nothing has come out as far as a definitive something is changing, and I'd like to have lunch on whether or not nothing changes, because I still think we're going to come out of this fairly unscathed as far as federal benefits goes. That would be my bet if I was making a wager.
I wouldn't bet against you.
And let's bet that they still have retirement seminars and mid-career seminars and beginning career seminars.
As long as the House can agree on this, we'll have a budget to pay those contracts that we have with our agencies.
Now, if they don't pass it, I've trying to read as much as I can, and I remember more than a couple columns said, you know, if they dropped us from AAA to AA, our rating, if you will, and some of them were saying it's no big deal. I would think that would be a huge deal. because you're going to have to pay more interest on Treasury debt. And
well, I don't have a clue, but I mean, the rest of the world, even if we do this, and nobody in Europe or Asia can understand our form of government any more than we get theirs, you know. But that said, the U.S. is a rich, sound, solid country, and there's no reason to believe that there would be that much of a panic that it would hurt us.
Yeah, I was doing some tax work for an individual in a European country. He got three different types of pensions. One because he was a highly paid exec. One because he had life. And I forget what the third one was. It was some iteration. Three government pensions based on because he made more than others. And one was a veteran's pension. It wasn't World War II. It was Algiers, I guess. And I go, how can they do that? That was three, and I forget what the fourth one was.
They're increasingly having problems doing that, too. The situation in Greece. You know, the social network is so expensive.
And then the other with, I was talking with somebody and needed something done in Europe, and they said, forget August. I guess Europe takes August off. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, the Americans, when they go to Paris, they think they're in the wrong town. But, you get, 8 weeks vacation a year, and virtually everybody takes August off, and those who don't are not happy about it.
Wow. Okay, we got two more minutes, or we got less if we don't want to take two more minutes. Final comments, thoughts, talking people off the ledge because, boy, we just get calls and the emails, and what happens if they do this, and how will I be protected, especially that G fund. And we finally got the pat answer down for the G fund, and the other funds never have any cash in them. They're securities. Well, I won't say never have cash, but they have enough cash to redeem it if somebody wanted it.
Yeah, I think that the advice I would give someone is just to stay cool, you know, watch what's happening, stay informed, and keep doing what you're doing. Keep coming to work every day. If you wanted to retire and you can afford to retire, go for it. If you're not ready, don't make any rushed decisions because of what could or possibly might happen, because so far nothing has happened.
Yeah, don't make any investment decisions, retirement decisions, pulling money from one thing or the other or cashing out based solely on a situation like this. Because more often than not, nothing happens.
And read both Mike's and Tammy's columns and you'll be much better able to face the day. And email us if you want. We're at For Your Benefit, FOR Your Benefit at NITPINC.com. Ask us general questions. Don't ask us what to do with money and what do we think about this, that, or another thing, but ask us, you know, factual questions. We're happy to answer them. Anyway, that's it. Next week, we'll have Michael Creedon come on. Michael is, he talks people off the ledge every day and gives them better opportunities, and maybe some of this will be apropos for him, but he's just a delight, and he's got that Irish brogue, and look forward to that. So, bye-bye, y'all. Have a good week, and let's keep our fingers crossed. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.